Listen to the voices of our world.
Justice in this country is a myth. That there's liberty and justice for all is an unhappy lie.
The death penalty is basically for poor people.
The state doesn't have any right over our life. Only God, who created us, has the right to our life.
The question is this who we really want to be?
Welcome to Voices of Our World, a presentation of this station and Mary Knoll. I'm Eileen Bott. Today's show is a matter of life and death. Since 1976, 879 people have been executed in the United States. Almost half of those death sentences, 399, were carried out in the South. In the state of Texas alone, there are 452 people on death row right now, and the state has every intention of executing every one of them. Back in January 2000, the Republican governor of Illinois, George Ryan, suspended all executions there after 13 death row prisoners were found to have been wrongly convicted. Doubtless, we have made mistakes. We have killed people who were not guilty. So, do we just keep going? Today you'll hear from eminent attorney and national commentator on the justice system, Jerry Spence, senior counsel for the Constitution Project, Joseph Onik, author and screenwriter, Mike Gray, and Mary Knoll's sister, Marie Dolores Nassauer.
I'm standing at the gallows. Everyone turn my way. I hear a voice ask me if I've got any last words to say.
Two boxes of Frosted Flakes and a pint of milk. A bag of cheese doodles and a Kit Kat bar. 12 hot dogs, mustard on the side, and a soda. A jar of dill pickles. Each were choices for the last meal of inmates who've already been put to death. Oklahoma City bomber Timothy McVeigh ordered a pint of mint chocolate chip ice cream. What would your last meal be? About 13 years ago, a prisoner in Arkansas, Ricky Ray Rector, about to be put to death, ate only half of his last meal, a pecan pie. He very deliberately set aside the other half for after his execution. On June 20, 2002, the United States Supreme Court issued a landmark ruling ending the execution of mentally retarded persons. But last year, a federal appeals court ruled that the state of Arkansas could force inmate Charles Laverne Singleton to take antipsychotic medication so that he would be sane enough to execute. Since the reinstitution of the death penalty, more than 103 death row inmates have been exonerated, and our justice system is predicated on the belief that it's preferable that we occasionally free a guilty person than ever execute an innocent one. You may have become familiar with a renowned champion of the underdog, Wyoming attorney Jerry Spence, when he acted as a network commentator on the O.J. Simpson trial. Kathy Golden spoke with Spence on the release of his 14th book, The Smoking Gun.
Jerry, last January, the 103rd death row inmate to be exonerated walked away from the death penalty. And yet the death penalty is extremely popular in this country still. I was wondering what you felt about that.
Well, I think, first of all, we have to understand that the death penalty doesn't do anybody any good. It doesn't stop murder. Those few states who do not have the death penalty have a lower murder rate than those states that do. And everybody agrees, even death penalty proponents, that there's nothing in the death penalty that stops people from killing. So what's the use of it, excepting that somehow we feel a need to kill because other people have killed? It makes killers of us, and it puts the power over our lives in the hands of some degenerate killer. Now let me show you how that works. Here is a degenerate killer out here who murders some innocent person. He has the power not only to murder them, but to make murders of us. Now, because he's murdered, we've decided that we're going to murder, and as a result of his act, he has the power over us to become murderers ourselves. In this country of ours, we are supposed to be responsible for what we do and for what the country does. And when the country goes to war, we are at war. When the country is at peace, we are at peace. When the country supports the death penalty and kills, we are killers. And so we have to understand that this isn't somebody else's responsibility, it's ours. And the question is this who we really want to be? So ultimately, I guess it comes down to the proposition that there's no good from it, but a lot of harm. It costs more money. If you want to talk about money, it costs more money to kill somebody than it does to keep them in the penitentiary all of their life. That's because there are all of these appeals in a death penalty case. The cost of the trial is always greater, the cost of experts, insanity pleas, all of the problems that go on in a death penalty case are extremely, extremely expensive. And then we really don't punish the right people. I mean, here's this man who's killed somebody, and now we're going to kill him, and he's over with his punishment. But how about his wife or his children, his mother and his father? They are already scarred from that terrible act against their child. So there are victims on both sides that are innocent. And finally, when you think of a little child that's been killed, and we're going to kill the killer, is this the kind of a memorial that we want to create for this child, is the death and the grave of another human being? So ultimately, the death penalty touches the lowest denominator of our human existence. It's something that we should have risen above a long time ago, and of course, across the world. In the civilized countries of the world, the death penalty is disdained and has been abolished long ago. France doesn't have it. Germany doesn't have it.
The United States is one of 84 nations that still have the death penalty. There are 76 nations that have abolished it outright. There are 35 that are rather on the fence about it. Of the 84 that still use it, they include Iran and China. And yet the U.S. is seen as swaggering about as the moral imperative.
You've said that so well. Said that better than I.
Jerry, if statistics point out that 70% of all court proceedings contain serious errors, why is it that Americans will only tolerate the idea of a temporary suspension of the death penalty rather than dropping it outright?
Well, I personally represented some black men in Chicago who had been on death row for 18 years, and it was discovered that they were there wrongfully, that they were absolutely innocent of the murder and rape that they were charged with. It was also apparent that the police knew that and didn't want to admit to their error, and they were totally exonerated. Cost the state of Illinois $36 million for that error. Can you imagine being a young man who lives 18 years in a cell, 6 by 6, with your head sleeping next to the toilet bowl, and that's where you live for 18 years, and you are innocent? Now, I'm telling you that there are large numbers of poor people who have no way to defend themselves, poor lawyers, if any, who are convicted of crimes that they haven't committed, and some of them get the death penalty. And it's a frightening thing in this country. It's something that we can't be proud of and that we have to change.
You hear people all the time talk about checkbook journalism. What about checkbook justice? I would imagine you've seen a lot of well-off people get away with one thing or the other, and an awful lot of people that have no money and no wherewithal end up in the prison cell or on death row.
Well, you see, justice in this country is a myth. That there's liberty and justice for all is an unhappy lie that we teach our children and that we've taught each other, that we believe ourselves, until we get involved in the justice system. And that's what the book The Smoking Gun is about. It takes the reader into an actual trial that I conducted in a little town in Oregon, representing a poor Scrabble farm woman and her 15-year-old child who were charged with murder by the good old boys in the community. And if you don't think that it is an almost impossibility to defend yourself when you are charged with murder by a power structure that has decided that you are guilty and that they are going to get you, you have to read the book. And the book is showing us what I have experienced in an entire career. About 96 to 97% of all people in this country charged with crimes end up being found guilty of one of the crimes that they've been charged with. And no prosecutor in this country is that good. That means a whole lot of people are taking lesser pleas for crimes that they didn't commit to avoid being found guilty of a crime that they didn't commit. We have more people in our penitentiaries than any other country in the world, including China and Russia. And we have more black men in penitentiaries in this country than we have black men in the universities. That isn't a very good statement about how there is liberty and justice for all.
Everyone needs to see the prisoner. They need to make it even easier by seeing me as a symbol, not a human being.
Think justice isn't for sale? Recently, multimillionaire Robert Durst, long suspected of two prior murders, was acquitted of the murder of his 71-year-old neighbor, Morris Black. Durst admitted he had dumped the dissected parts of Mr. Black in Galveston Bay. When arrested, Durst was disguised as a woman and claimed the killing was an accident. Durst paid for the best possible representation, and he is free. The Constitution Project does not take a position on the death penalty, but it does believe that every possible step should be taken to make sure that it is implemented fairly. Eleanor Ostrinsky spoke with Joseph Onek, senior counsel for the Constitution Project.
With respect to the death penalty, to me, the most important thing, assuming you're going to keep the death penalty, is to improve the quality of legal counsel of people who are charged with the death penalty. Very few people who have able counsel, that is, very few wealthy people, are ever sentenced to death. The death penalty is basically for poor people, and to a considerable degree, for minority people. If you could give to poor people really good legal assistance, I think half the cases would not be death penalty cases right at the beginning. Second thing, obviously, is you have to have very clear and good procedures for making use of DNA evidence. In addition, you have to make sure that there are adequate resources for lawyers so that people can make their good defense on the death penalty stage. Many people who commit terrible crimes had terrible childhoods. And if all that information could be presented in an effective way, maybe the jurors would say, you know, we feel sorry enough for this person who may have had no parents, whatever, that we will not give them the death penalty. If the person is possibly mentally retarded, you have to make sure all the right tests are done, all the right things are gathered. If the person had serious mental illness that wasn't treated or treated badly, again, you need to get all those records. So it costs money for the defense to mount the kind of arguments that will convince a jury that this person shouldn't be sentenced to death. And the states have to provide that, and most of them don't. And we have to do more to change that. I think it's a disgrace to our legal system that so little resources are given to somebody whom the state is threatening to and often succeeding in killing.
We do have this idea that it's innocent until proven guilty, and it seems that some people are just guilty because somebody needed them to be guilty at some point.
Yes, and sometimes it is that, and at some point, regrettably, we've learned that particularly eyewitnesses are very, very fallible. And you have people who, you know, were absolutely sure that they could, for example, identify an assailant, either when they were the victim or maybe they were standing near the site of the crime. And they say, that's the person gets convicted, and then DNA evidence or something else shows that the person was absolutely innocent. So it's not only deliberate misconduct that leads to miscarriages of justice. Sometimes it is mistaken identity. But, of course, in my view, that's what argues so strongly against having the death penalty at all. The odds that you are going to execute innocent people are so high that even if you believe that in an ideal world the death penalty would be acceptable, we are never going to live in that ideal world.
So, are you for or against the death penalty? Let us know what you think. Log on to the Voices of Our World webpage, www.marynoll.org. There's a spot there for your feedback. I'm Eileen Bott. You're listening to Voices of Our World and Ani DeFranco singing Crime for Crime. You can call us at 1-888-MARYNOLL. That's 1-888-MARYKNOLL.